Through Journeys on Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com and simulcast with wolfspiritradio.com. Join JP, your tour guide today, on this journey of discovery from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth.
Good evening, good afternoon, and good morning, wherever you are, to Journeys with JP. Hang on a second, let me just get my recorder going. Stop that one, and start that one. There we go. I'm just just been relaying and discussing various things. This is my last live show this year. Tomorrow I'll be taking all my equipment to pieces. Sean, I just sent it as a sort of circular to people, but Sean read it all out on his show just a few minutes ago. Where I wanted to go this evening, I was asked onto a show on Liffey FM. Now, Liffey is a tiny little village, a tiny little community in Dublin, Ireland. And they're really switched on, and they have this little FM radio station, a proper little local radio station, Liffey FM, and one of their DJs, Mick Diffish, is into this stuff, and he invites me on the show. And so today he had a very interesting, I don't know where it came from. I think it was like, where do we start? And I really had to do the whole going all the way back thing, using my magic sound effects and taking it back all the way, because really the problems that we're in, well, where do we start? And you see, exactly, where do you start? All right, so one of the things they were saying, they were talking about the government, and they were talking about paying taxes and stuff like that. And I've realized that over the last couple of years hanging out with all you folk, I have a different attitude these days, a very different attitude to things. And the attitude is more in a, I have a more of a sense of a galactic kind of, more of, well, I don't know, not galactic federation sort of idea. That's a bit too trite, but a galactic unity, a galactic union of, association, a loose association, a free association of free peoples in this galaxy. Now, what it seems like is there aren't many. A lot of them are kind of under some kind of domination or other from some sort of race. Now, where it all comes from, it's beyond that even. Where did it come from? It came from some other level of other stuff, which I want to go into, because we had an hour. And they're Irish guys, so they talk a lot, so I didn't get much chance to kind of lay this story out, and I thought, well, this might be a good thing. I've got no guest tonight, and so I thought I'll do the big sort of big story of things as far as I know. Everybody's got a different story, everybody's got their own version of the story, and it only goes back so far. And I say, well, what happens before that? And they say, oh, I don't know. That's where it starts. So maybe people might think, the bad stuff, the Federal Reserve and all this stuff, that started about 100 years ago. And then you think, well, hang on a second, the Illuminati, well, started 1776, didn't they? And then every so often you think, oh, well, hang on a second, this whole thing looks like the Roman Empire. This is like American Empire, the Nazi Empire, it all looks like the Roman Empire, all the same thing. And you see, well, hang on a second, if you join up the progression of this, you see that they, you know, they basically have very slowly progressed north and west, starting out in Mesopotamia, in Sumeria. Basically they go from one place to another, they leave their stuff, and go on to colonize a new thing until finally they've created empires. And every time they create an empire, it kind of falls apart at the end, but it still seems to remain. And I think that's what they call the worm that dieth not, isn't it? So, you know, when was this worm born? It seems to be for us at this stage, maybe about 7,000 years or so. But it goes back further. You know, what happened before that? Well, before that, there was a global cataclysm. What was that? Well, that was the result of a war between Lemuria and Atlantis. Well, how did that happen? I thought they were peace-loving. Well, seems that the Lemurians were the humans who had... the Lemurians seem to be more reptilian in their kind of vague, you know, it's like dragon-like, amphibians and, you know, green people in general. So let's call them the green people. And then there was these Atlanteans, who were the sort of white people, who seemed to be some colony from Alcyone or something like that. Or a group. Maybe it was a new project. Well, however it happened, the Atlanteans, who were situated in the place where we call the Atlantic, when there was less water, the Lemurians were in where we are, the South American plate and the Pacific. Again, the water was much lower then. We'll talk about, well, how did the water get higher? That's another part of the story. That's further back. Anyway, so we're about 7,000 years ago. Further back, we're in Atlantis now. So that's, that's from about 13,000 years ago, back down to about... some people say Atlantis was founded about like 43,000 years ago or something like that. Maybe much further back. We know that Lemuria was here for about, was here about 1 million years ago. And that's sort of where, some sort of civilization started appearing. So, we go back 1 million years. Is there still evil? Yes. It just goes back, because a lot of the reasons for founding places like Lemuria, Atlantis, are like the way that the pilgrims founded America, you know, to get away from London, you know, to get away from Babylon. And Babylon has been the bane of the life, because basically the Babylon is the, and this is where it all came from, the governmental structure. And the governmental structure is a draconian structure. But the draconians, right, okay, so, all right, let's blame the reptiles. No. Because then it turns out I worked out the numbers. I doused them out. So going further back, okay, so we're now back about 1 million years when people are founding Lemuria. On Earth. But then we have to go further back, because we have there's a massive war now when is it? I think it's about 1 billion years ago, right? It's we're going back, you know, it was 100 years. But now about 1 billion years ago is when the and if you we're talking about the illusion of linear time and all that stuff, but humans first appeared in this galaxy, in this universe, from some other universe. We all appeared somehow as refugees. At that point, the story goes hazy for humans, but they were placed here. Now, about 4 billion years ago, I came up with the numbers earlier. I'm just trying to picture them because I lost the document. 7 billion years ago, or thereabouts, is when this stuff appears. Okay, and it's, how can I describe it? If a planet was destroyed in a war, for instance, the whole place was fried, what happens to the souls of the people who are on that? Well, that's what I believe black goo is. It's like the residue of traumatized consciousness. And because it's kind of so traumatized, it's like in the same way that MK victims, students, graduates, are faced with the trauma of leave your body or die. So they leave their body, leaving a blank slate. This is what's happened to this black goo, I believe. From the story of Andronicus, which I've been reading out on a Thursday in the last 6 months, it turns out that the goo can be programmed. And what it does, it takes up the consciousness of the person. If a conscious being comes towards it, it takes on the consciousness of the person and is in intelligence, and it learns and is quantum entangled like a hive mind. And essentially is the essence of what they call the black stone, which we'll come back to later on. So anyway, at some point, about 7 billion years ago, there were these life forms, you know, little lizards and reptiles sort of scuttling around. And at some point, an asteroid that came from a destroyed planet came into this galaxy and probably went everywhere. There's probably bits that flew all over the place. And some of them hit stars and some of them hit planets and some of them kept traveling and some of them hit, vegetated planets. Others hit inhabited planets. And I believe that one of them was called Alpha Draconis or Tubin, or a planet that ran around there, got hit by a bunch of this stuff. And now this is my conjecture, but imagine that scene in The X-Files where the guy picks up that lump of black goo, or the black goo kind of goes into him, and then it occupies his brain, slides across his eyes, and then starts learning. And it learns about the guy, and then it transfers itself to the woman, and it transfers, you know, just keeps transferring, learning more and more and more. Every person it moves into, it evolves a little bit, but also takes some of their knowledge from them. So it becomes like a hive mind. So you give this to a bunch of lizards, right? And they evolve into the Alpha Draconians through this hybridization artificial intelligence process. So they're basically extremely intelligent but very unevolved. It's like they've taken a shortcut. And so they are full of all the least evolved emotions. And they pride, you know, pride being one of them. But they're proud of it. You know, they're proud to be assholes, you know. That's the way they are. And, you know, we come across them in Star Trek, we come across them as Klingons. Anyway, so the black goo creates the first space-faring race in this galaxy. And it just happens to be artificially jacked reptoids. Now, if this sounds like the plot of a lot of science fiction movies, well, there's no coincidence there. They're trying to tell you something. So, further on up the road, again appearing out of somewhere, about some couple of billion years ago, hang on. About a billion and a half years ago, the first humans appeared, and they apparently were some kind of refugee. Again, as I said, we don't know the story, but there's obviously, you know, you don't move away from something because it was nice there. So we find our human race sort of, again, a refugee into this galaxy, and then at some point they appear in on a planet going around the star called Vega in the Lyra constellation. And Lyra is quite near Draconis. Oh, if you want to know where Draconis is, right, so Alpha Draconis, if you look up at the plow, you can see the panhandle of the plow. And that panhandle is it's three stars. One, you know, like all in a sort of a line, but one slightly above the rest, and one in the middle. If you go up and then go up another little bit, you'll see a little red star about as bright as Mercury. And that's Thuban, which is Alpha Draconis. This is the star where these reptiles come, you know, evolved and grew up. And essentially, you know, if you imagine like the cross between the Klingon and the Borg from Star Trek, you know, in Stargate they had these things called Goa'uld. These like little, you know, they look like little dragons, to be honest. They look like little inhabiting dragons. They were an infesting parasite. And essentially, that this is what it is. But it's not a creature such as we think. It's an invading artificial intelligence. It's what Dan McBolan's talking about. It's what everybody's talking about. The black goo, the artificial intelligence. It's all the same stuff. Watch the X-Files movie. Go and watch the X-Files. Go download the X-Files movie. It tells you all about it. And also the agenda of some of the powers that be, which is they've given up. They've surrendered to it. And they're trying to allow the planet to be terraformed. So, remember that thing when George Bush's eye went funny? Yeah, watch the X-Files movies, people. It might not be exactly as depicted, you know, it's a drama, but there's a lot of information in there. So, as I said, I thought I'd kind of summate all the things that I've learned so far. I don't know if I can do it in 2 hours, but you know, I've learned quite a bit about all of this stuff, and also kind of this is part of an intuitive journey of following it back and joining the dots together. So a lot, you know, some of it, but the points are more or less there. I'm not in the Revolution chat room. I should go over there. Let me just go and walk in there and see now. Where is it? Where's a good place to go? So yeah, that's right over here. Revolution Radio. So yes, indeed. By the way, we're a listener-supported station. Revolution Radio relies on listeners supporting, and we have specials and offers, and I believe that right up until midnight tonight, there is gold bars. Gold bars. No, what am I talking about? I'm talking rubbish. Not gold, but silver bars. Silver bars are available. Oh, what am I saying? Anyway, so silver bars are available. Go to the support page. It would be nice if they were gold bars, but you'd have to pay like $1,000 for a little gold bar. Actually, if anybody's interested in gold, get in touch with me. But the silver dollars, silver ingots, silver items are available from Hawk, pure stuff. I'm not sure if it's 999 or 999 silver. If you're going to make colloidal silver, you need 4 9s. If you're gonna just use it for trading, you can use 3 9s. But, the 4 9s, purest silver coin you can get, or that I can get, or that I've found so far, is the Canadian maple leaf, brothers and sisters. If you can get Canadian maple leaves, they're still pretty cheap, and you can make colloidal silver with them, so they're the healthiest ones. The other ones have impurities, you know, that 0.9%, what is it, 90, it's 99.99, so the 0.01, percent is still, you know, toxic enough to, when it's reduced to a molecular level. So, it's you got to use the Canadian maple leaf there. So, meanwhile, somewhere, Brent. Hello.
JP.
Speak to me.
Okay. Turning my heater off and keep the background noise out of the way. There we go. I just wanted to tell you about a website. I wanted to make sure you were aware of it. It's called David Cerita. The Cerita is S-E-R-E-D-A. Cerita.
Oh yes, he's very interesting. He's also into sound and frequency, and he's done a lot of excellent frequency work. Including the idea that the Schumann resonance is different at different latitudes, which kind of makes sense. It's not 7.83 everywhere. In fact, it seems to be all over the place, all over the time. It's 123. Yay.
Okay, so you are aware of it?
I'm aware of David Cerita, yeah.
Yes, okay,
I've not heard everything that he said. I've heard a couple of lectures of his. Very interesting, though. Very good. But anyway, would you like to throw something into this mix? It's an aggregate situation, because I'm trying to aggregate all that I've learned from talking to guests on both of my shows over the last 5 years.
You know, on Cosmic Reality, you offer those tones. Well, David Cerita sells them. He offers them for money. And the one I was wondering if I could play, maybe you could pick it up on the phone a little bit, the introduction that he's taken off of there that used to be for free. It's about a minute and a half clip or 2 minute clip. I could play it over my speaker and then you could, it might come across my phone, I don't know.
Well, okay then. Go ahead.
Okay.
Roll the
clip. Go to the clip. Here I go. And then I'll put the phone near the speaker.
Hey, it's just like Strange Universe. Roll the clip.
Here we go.
Roll the clip now. It's coming. I know the clip's coming.
One, two, three. It was revealed with a 10-string. From the Bible Book of Psalms reveal an ancient harp whose 10 strings were tuned to a forgotten 10-note music scale of God. When David Cerita did the math, he used a single tone generator to play all 10 tones, and they played with a metal distortion between each note. Very there's more than one scale of Celsius. Because there are 10 tones, this music scale can reach an infinite amount of octaves that rise in a perfect decimal series towards infinity. We have found this to be a 10-tone scale. The only evidence of a 10-string instrument in the Bible comes in the book of Psalms 92:3. It reveals the 10-string meter. Could this evidence in the Bible book of Psalms reveal an ancient harp whose 10 strings were tuned to a forgotten 10-note music scale of God? When David Sweeney did the math, he used a single tone generator to play all 10 tones, and they play with no distortion between each note.
Did you hear that?
Well, I could hear the tone, because Skype sometimes compresses the sound, it changed in pitch, but once it had established the pitch, we got a good tone of it, but I couldn't make out what he was saying at all. Brent? Oh. Well. Maybe he didn't hear me. Alright, let me just make sure. Yeah, I can hear me. Well, there you go. So Brent came in, made a tone, and has subsequently left the building. Excellent. Well, that's what we like. Oh, wow. Yes. Well, good evening. I've just dropped into the chat room there. I can just about make it out. If you want to say something to me, the letters are, you know, the screen's about 3 or 4 feet away, and I've only got close range reading glasses. So if you want to put anything in the chat room, put it in big letters. I'm logged in as JP. Yeah. So now, where was I? It was a long time ago, in a galaxy not so far away. Right, where were we? Now, let's recap. We went back as far as something like 7 billion years, where the appearance in this planet, in this galaxy, of some form of asteroid, destroyed planet, dwarf chunk of stuff that had the residue of consciousness from a planet that had been destroyed in earlier conflict. And so what caused the conflict in the first place was probably embedded in the traumatized consciousness residue that exists in this black stone material. And it's essentially, you know, when people are talking about the MK Ultra and these things, it's essentially in the kind of primal state. It's been traumatized, it's in a kind of numb, it's numb to itself and it's numb to everything. You could call that the construct state. And it will take on whatever consciousness gets implanted in it. So if you, for instance, are some kind of dominating character, you know, you have that kind of character, and you pick up this stone, it will take on your dominating characteristics. That's what it's like. And because it's quantum entangled, because it's a part of a consciousness, it will spread that consciousness all through the rest of it. It's like a default program. So, what do you get? Ah, there's Brent again. So that's really how we got the black goo kind of situation, in my humble opinion. Oops, where's he gone? It's an it, and that it is a residue that is Let's bring back. There he is. It's a residue of consciousness from a previous trauma. So it's something that did live, but
hello.
Isn't anymore. Brent, hello. How are you?
Yeah, just fine. I don't know what was wrong with my phone.
Oh, well, it just dropped out. Well, you see, your signal is not as clear as it could be when, you know, because it's you're on a cell phone. But can you explain
right.
what David was talking about? Can you kind of relay what he was saying? Because that was unclear. I heard the tone, but I was unclear about what you were saying, what he was saying.
He was saying that he discovered a 10-tone natural chromatic scale that was in harmony with the biblical 10-string harp that was used in a verse, I forget the number, quoted in Solomon, and that it had infinite chromatic possibilities. And then he goes on to explain that it has the same type of tonality as the recordings of the sun's sound and solar planetarial sounds that have been recorded by NASA, and that the natural sounds or tones that come from there are more of a spiral nature, and they can be accomplished by bringing your vocal patterns, for example, reiterating A, E, I, O, U to the different tones to come into harmony to cause this spiral type of tonality.
Yeah, like this. The cycle of fifths.
I'm not sure. You're the expert on this compared to me. That's for sure. But, you know, I play those tones occasionally, and they are soothing, and it's just 10 rather than, you know, the normal chromatic 12 or whatever. But it's a system of 10, and they're all in complete harmony. Anyway.
So that sounds like, that sounds like a pentatonic scale. The 10 strings are in harmony. You'd have, pentatonic means 5, so there's two octaves of, 5. Ah, be interesting. Actually, one of my friends lent me a 10-string guitar. Oh no, it's an 8-string. What am I talking about? It's not a 10-string. It's an 8-string. It's like having, a 6-string guitar with a bass guitar sort of merged with it. It's like
right.
They traveled through time together and became one thing. It was about 8-string.
Well, this is a 10-string harp. I don't know exactly what the length of the strings are or what.
Well, this sounds like the lyre, you see, the L-Y-R-E, as in lyra, you know, as in this place that I was talking about. And there's
right.
probably... there is probably a sense of harmony that comes from this place because it was a harmonic place. And I'm not sure about what their number systems were, but that might be an interesting thing to find out. Because the veil of forgetfulness has been lifted. We should now be able to start remembering our past lives. This is the story. And
right.
This is why it's necessary for me to tell this
Jesus
story.
Christ. I think I was Jesus Christ in my past life. Yeah.
Were you? You know, I think a lot of people do. But you hear a lot of people who do. And there's some kind of reality to it in that if they're
right.
a Christian, and they've been a Christian, a zealot, you know, a really serious Christian, you give your life for eternity. You know, and so, and what
right.
you want to do is to become like the Christ. So, you kind of merge with the Christ in some way. And that's the story of it. That's how you get the body of Christ. You get the 144,000 people who have the Christ energy. But it's really coming from the top down, that you have to reach up. You have to reach up and it comes down. You see what I mean?
Like, right.
Like the thing on the, in the airplane when you need oxygen. You have to reach up for it and it'll come down and then you can use it. So that's the same as your spiritual reality. Like you meditate, that's reaching up, and then you get infused, that's coming down. And, there's a particular time of year, like now, where the veil is very, has traditionally been very thin, but now we don't have it at all. So whenever you ask, the universe right now will manifest very, very soon. And we will discover that humanity is a manifesting godlike being. And if anybody says, I've got a job in the morning, I've got onto my phone.
There you go.
Because that's my girlfriend on the line. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I wish it was mine. I believe that that. Go ahead.
Don't call me at the office, especially when I'm on the air. Hello. She should know. She should know. God, she's got no computer now. She's got no sense of timing and everything. Yeah, all of the computers.
Well, she
brought
yeah,
her
so
computer.
Sorry about your computers.
Well, she brought her computer to my house. She brought. So thank you. But she brought her. Well, I lent her a laptop. Her computer had broken down. I lent her my laptop. She brought it to my house the other day, and it broke. Its hard drive just failed. You know, it's just like. Starting out,
I'm sorry.
I know that screen. Well, you know, we're worn out. Everything's worn out. You know, basically, I've been running a radio station as Sean read out. You know, I've been running a station for 5 years on second, third hand reclaimed laptops. You know, eventually bits give away and, my network is all messed up and my voltages are all messed up on my mixing desk and, so I want to make it all nice and clean and refit it and, you know, put new knobs instead of having crackly ones and things like that. So get everything nice and solid.
It's hard to fight designed obsolescence.
Well, and general entropy. and dust, and smoke, you know, because I live in a cottage that has, you know, I've got a stove here, that burns wood. And so there's wood dust and there's sawdust and there's ash and there's smoke and there's soot, you know, and that where it's like about 6 feet away from my mixing desk. So,
It's so wonderful that man has, evolved to such a great extent, right?
Mm. Well, anyway, so I've got this, I've got this ancient, heating situation and this very modern dust sensitive, broadcast situation just very close to each other. And I suppose that's what you expect. But anyway, so I've got to take everything apart and clean and reset everything. So, with regard to David Sarita, thank you for reminding. Right. Yeah, and go check him out. Yeah, he's very interesting. What would you like to say, Brent?
I'd like to say soliloquy analogos and no to digitus maximus fractus fallacious maximus romanus. That's what I'd like to say.
Really? The cursing in Latin, huh?
I just made it up as I went along.
Right? So, yeah, well, it's the old carborundum one, you know, don't let the bastards grind you down. And really, you know, I feel a bit ground down, and this will help replenish me as well by rebuilding. You know, it will be a suitable... process that will happen with both of us, if you see.
Nope. Well, I'll be there on the other side for you, and I think AM is the answer. AM radio is analog still, I believe, and maybe CBs or Citizen Band radios, something that's still analog, if we can get the analog tones out, I think it'll make a difference.
Yeah, FM is analog as well. Anything beyond the 70s is AI infested. There's a parallel universe somewhere where they don't have digital, where they didn't have the Roswell crash in one parallel dimension, where they have Tesla technologies and they still have cassette tapes. It's great. Do you know when CDs first came out? Everybody got this CD. Oh, I like it. I like that treble. You know, I've totally ripped out my upper middle range. But what was really nice is when you put them on a cassette, it kind of just softened that tone a little bit. It took the ultra high resonances out when you record it on a cassette, and they sounded much better after that. It kind of restored it back to its original magnetism, because it's all about magnetism and vibrations. Yeah. In a way, when you're recording, you know, like in the first times when you're recording directly onto wax, the movement of the voice and the percussion of the air on the diaphragm literally moved the needle, the stylus, to cut it. So that was a direct mechanical connection. And then everything else has been to separate those two processes.
Well, which do you think is better, the stylus on the material or the magnetic tape for analog?
What's better? Well, you know, as I said, this is where it, you know, that's where it started, as you know, making little grooves and digs into a piece of wax. And then it went on to rearranging magnetic polar material on a piece of tape that had been covered with rust. That was an interesting discovery. I wonder who did that. And that's how it's been going. And you know, that's still the technology that you have in your hard drive. So theoretically, you could possibly record analog information on a hard drive. If you could, rejig it. And I wonder if anybody's doing this. Here's a challenge to any geeks who are listening to Studio B right now, or Wolf's Radio.
That's interesting.
Repurpose a magnetic hard drive, because it's still a magnetic, it's still like a magnetic tape. It's a high capacity magnetic tape. Imagine, you know, imagine recording that. You could have thousands of hours of analog information on that. And you could just...
You'd have to get some sort of microphone in there that... some sort of...
No. You see, what you're not hearing is that it's writing digital information, which is a pulse or a space. But it's just an arrangement of magnetic particles.
Okay.
All right, now...
Right, but they're small particles.
Yeah.
Ones and zeros.
That's right. Okay, so the trick is, right, do you remember the linear player? You know, the linear record player?
Right.
The vinyl one that had, it didn't have an arm that kind of, cut an arc across the record. It had, a tracker, just like a 3D printer has. Yeah?
Oh, no, I don't remember that.
All right, it went sideways across the disc. Well, so it went across the disc in a straight line on a little rail. You see? That was called a linear deck. And, you know, for whatever it is, that then stepped into how a CD works or how a hard drive works, which is basically, lots of concentric rings of magnetic material. Just tiny, tiny, very, very, very fine. Much finer than a human hair. And so, if you had the right mechanism, which would have to be, you'd have to have some sort of digital stepping, you could probably do it in analog. You got an analog computer. But basically, you'd need to step very slow, very carefully and nimbly across from one track to another, And very slowly track it across, but you could probably hold quite a lot of audio data in it.
Well, one way you can have pure analog sound, and that is to talk to a person in person.
Yeah, and then their skin can feel you.
Yes.
You see, because we not only communicate on an audio level, we also communicate on a infrared level. Like, your skin flushes and then drains and flushes and drains. And that produces a very low frequency infrared signal. Not a lot of people know that.
And an aura level and a light level.
Yeah.
And
it's an invisible light. Well, it's an invisible light. It's beyond the visible light, but your skin can feel it. You know, you can walk past a fire or you can walk past a room. Where there is a radiant fire in, you can feel the radiant fire on and off as you walk past the room, can't you?
I can feel the shade on my vehicle when I go on a hot day in the summer.
Mm.
When I pass under a tree, I can feel that.
Yeah. So, anyhow.
Yeah, there's a lot to... what to say for the real thing.
So yes, but still the real thing is not even as we think it might be. You know, like we were saying, you know, the sun on a hot day.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, for instance.
Lots learned.
You might think going up towards the sun will get hotter, won't you? If the sun was a hot thing and you went towards it, it would get hotter as you went up. Yeah?
You would suspect, and who knows? I haven't been there.
You've been up a mountain, haven't you?
Right.
Why are mountains covered with snow at the top? Because it's warm up there, or because it's not warm up there?
Because right? It's not warm up there.
Exactly. So, when you go in an aeroplane, do they have to heat the air? Yes, they do. Or you'll freeze. When you go into space.
The reflection. Yeah, so it's the reflection off the earth that's putting out the heat.
It's actually the friction in the air. The air molecules are responding to the microwave beam signals of the sun. You know, essentially in the same way that food responds to, you know, food gets hot when you microwave it, yeah? The sun microwaves the atmosphere. The atmosphere filters out the harmful microwaves, but gets warm. Boom. Hence your weather.
So we're all like hot dogs in a microwave, right?
Yeah. I wouldn't worry. So the sun is not hot, and it's more like a plasma ball. It's like, you know those things with the little glass globe, where you put, if you put your hand on it, you get these lightning bolts that come from the middle. Yeah?
Yeah, just don't give it enough surface area to the...
You're okay. The sun is basically light. It's like a fluorescent bulb. Yeah, the fluorescent bulb. Here's what you're an engineer, aren't you?
That's pretty damn hot when you take it out, by the way, a fluorescent bulb.
Hmm. But you know the inside of a fluorescent bulb is another bulb. Fluorescent bulb is a bulb inside a bulb, isn't it?
Yeah, you've got a vacuum in there, right?
Right, so, but there's two tubes. There's a little tube on the inside, and then there's a larger tube on the outside. And in the little tube is mercury vapor. Okay, so this is what's going on in your in these little and in your CFLs, your little pigtail bulbs, right? What is happening is, okay, so you don't want to break one open because they're toxic. Right, they're all over the bloody place now. So we, you know, it's like the black goo. It's all over, mercury's all over the place. Ooh, mercury plus black goo. That sounds like a bad combination, doesn't it? Anyway, so
yeah, it takes a hell of a long time to heat up and turn on. It bothers me.
Yeah, well, here's how it works. You see, it's basically a fluorescent tube that is filled with mercury vapor gas, ionized so that it glows like a neon, but it glows in the ultraviolet band. You can't see it, but it's blinding. Right? And then what they do is that they take another tube and put another tube on top of that. And that has an internal powder coating of a fluorescent material, like your glow stars. You know your glow stars? The things that glow in the dark?
Right.
Yeah? And you shine your light on, the blue light on, you shine the blue light on them and they light up. Yeah? Essentially,
right.
Kind of powder, phosphorescent powder, is coated the inside of the outer tube. So that when the ultraviolet light that's coming from the middle, hits the powder, it glows in a visible white spectrum.
Yeah.
Okay. This is, and they're essentially, they're halving the frequency. They're dropping it by an octave by doing that. It's a filter.
And speaking of mercury, that comes to the red mercury, which gets back to your original thesis of your show today, just going through the process of, where did we come from, you know?
Exactly. What's the true origin? And as far as I can see, that's where we started. This is like combining everybody's story. There is more. And I want to go more, if you don't mind, because I'd like to cover the story of Maldek.
Yeah, please do, and I'm going to get off the line, okay?
Okay, Brent. Thank you very much for your contribution, and have a very happy Christmas and a wonderful New Year.
And the same to you and everybody listening, and I appreciate you taking my call.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Bye. Brent is just leaving the building. Bye. So, and how do I rate this? Skype wants me to rate this. I'd say fair. Fair, minor problems, but you know, the other side, speech was not, had distortions, yeah. There was noise in the call, yeah. Anyway, so. There we go. Thank you very much, Skype, for asking me for my feedback on that particular call. How lovely of you. Anyway, so where were we? We were, alright, so, about a billion years ago, these Lyrans were invaded by the Draconians. Remember the Draconians had been, augmented in this way. And so, they were sort of, evolved up to a level, but they were only evolved as far as like domination and control were concerned, because that's just the lizard mind. That's, you know, it's fine when you're the size of a gecko, you know, but when you're big, it's like it just starts to become a problem to the neighbors. Anyhow, as we have been, this is what happens when black goo gets involved. So we find ourselves with the planet revolving around Lyra. I don't know its name. Does anybody know its name? By the way, if you want to talk to me, I've got the chat room open, but you have to put it in big letters. It's really huge, mind-blowingly large letters so that I can read it. Otherwise, I'm just seeing this blurry list of stuff going past. Anyway, all right, well... And tonight, okay, turn off your other player, please, Ray. There we go. Because otherwise it gets very confusing. Yeah. Are you with me, Ray?
Yep.
Just pause the player on the chat room there. Just press the play button. It will go. Sounds like it. Ray, good afternoon, good evening, good morning. It is 2 a.m.
Just great show. I'm just listening to the other fellow's just had a...
Whoops.
You said you want to carry on.
Can you come closer to the mic? Come closer to the computer. Lean in a bit.
Okay, am I there?
Yeah, you still got a bit of distortion, but that'll do. Ray Rowe from... where are you from? In the home counties somewhere, aren't you?
I'm in London, Pinner.
In Pinner, in Middlesex.
We spoke before.
Yes, we have. But just to introduce you to the global audience, to.
Do you remember he was talking about the sun, the heat?
Oh my God! Yes. Look, we'll be back in about 3-4 minutes, and please. Go and get your cup of tea, and we'll continue the journey from backwards, from the past to the future, hopefully we'll be able to project a good outcome.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Are you there?
Yeah, I am, but the, where's it gone?
Is it me? Is it me? Every it's the second time I come on, and now I'm doing... I feel so guilty, JP, I really do. I'm taking you apart, I really am. You're such a lovely fella. And you always have a hard time.
I've had some terrible connection issues, Ray.
I listen to Kerry, I listen to Alfred, I listen to all. You are the one they hit. Because you know why? Because you're on the button.
either that or my buttons have got dust underneath them. I'm going to buy a large bottle of switch cleaner.
Even Simon Parks is really good, but you are on the button because you do it from the heart. I know, and they know, and they hit you bad. Do you know I couldn't get your show from 7 o'clock to about 20 past 10 tonight? You hear me?
Yeah. What did you say? 25:10.
Yeah. I start at 7 o'clock, and at 10:20 I couldn't get on. And then about 10:20, you was doing the meditation thing.
Oh, the litanies. What did you think of those?
Yes. But I couldn't get in from 7 o'clock. I tried again and again. I'm not going to give up. And it would not come on. Every time I retried. I must have done it 50 times. Really, yeah.
So Ray, do you want to add something to this story? Do you have some nuggets for the soup?
I do, actually. I mean, we're coming to this AI, as I was watching, listening to Alfred one show one time, and CIA, and I thought about this, CIA, if you write the word as C, S-E-E, C-I-A, can you understand what I'm saying?
It's like a Canadian is asking you if you can see him.
Yeah.
C-I-A?
Telling me about her dreams was already, her dreams started after the Paris false flag, obviously. That's when her dreams come in. That she was... I can't remember what she was... She was drifting off somewhere anyway. I can't really remember what she was saying. But this started after the Paris thing. And it was a good dream.
So you heard you heard about the France thing, and then she started having dreams. And what was the nature of the dream?
The nature of the dream was that she's been there, come back. There's nothing. I can't really remember what she's saying. I was trying to analyse it, now actually basically forgetting what she was saying. But she was been there, come back, seen the false flag, and then seen the other side of it, but it wasn't there. It didn't happen. In one sense. You know what I mean?
So she saw behind its fake, its falseness.
Yeah, she saw it happening, and then the next dream she had, it didn't happen. Like a timeline sort of thing, I suppose. Then she realised, is it false or was it false? Did I dream it or did not dream it? Then I told her about, she asked me about these false flags, because I told her a lot about these false flags earlier with Charlie Hebdo and all these other things. And she's saying, what is the connection there? So I said, it's a thing called false flags, Sandra. And she said, what is a false flag? So I said, a false flag is basically, well, something happens, not necessarily people don't die, but it's done by people who are carrying false flags and doing it for a reason to cause disruptions. And she picked it up. She said, I thought about that. She got a big thing about that Lee Rigby. Remember the Lee Rigby thing? Yeah.
That's the guy who got beaten up. Yeah.
I don't know what it, as it goes, saying about that Lee Rigby thing. There's a big thing on Facebook, and about 10 mates of mine have posted it up saying, don't forget today, and it wasn't today, it was yesterday actually, that Lee Rigby died exactly a year today, and the newspapers seem to forget. Now, I can't understand that, because Lee Rigby died, apparently, it was 2 years ago, near enough, and it was in May. Funny, just stuck that in, because it was in my mind, sorry. Anyway, when I told her about that, certain things clicked together in her mind. That there is false flags. Yes. And there's, these actors floating around the world or wherever they are, you know, for money, glory, whatever, however they do it, I don't know. The girl, from the Boston bombing, she was in one there, and she was in Charlie Hebdo, she was in...
Yes, the famous crying girl.
Yeah, oh, the famous crying one, yeah.
It's called Natalie or something, is what the name is. She looks like a Natalie, but...
Oh, she needed an Oscar. And, it's just amazing that, how to get these people to do it, and they can't see why they're doing it. It's amazing, isn't it?
Well, you know, the whole, long story.
I know.
And here's the thing.
Well, I was going to get back to you. Sorry.
Yeah, go on. Get back to.
I want to get back to what you were talking about, what you really want to get out tonight. Because you really are on the ball tonight. And you really want to say what you want to say. How you was talking to your, person beforehand. I think that you got a lot to say, JP, and you got a lot of good love in you. You're just a diamond man, I really admire you. You're doing this show on a shooting string, you know, it's really great. The other day, Alex Collier, right, you're doing it for pure charity to help this fellow out, because he's has nowhere to go, nothing to do. I was on Facebook and it come up on Facebook. Now you can download it for free. And I quoted underneath, you can watch it for free, but you also can donate to his webinar. Now, I only put it up yesterday, and I had 10 people quoting me straight away, saying, thank you, we didn't know we could do that, and we will donate. See?
That's lovely, because people really do have a heart.
Yeah. We know what these people do, right? They steal these things, and they put it on there, so Alex don't get their money. We know what they do. You know what I mean? We know they suck the blood the last little bit. So, but it is nice that people know. I just wanted to put my word in, and it did go a long way.
10 people. It does. Very well done. Yeah. Thank you very much.
One person, 20 people.
That's right. And that's exactly. That's the meme. That's the idea.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
So, thank you very much for calling in, Ray. It's lovely to talk to you again. Always nice to have a connection with Middlesex. I used to live in Harrow, and it goes by a different name.
Thank you very much.
God bless you, mate.
Yeah. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
So, and beaming down to Earth Planet as Ray Rowe. Kind of like, there we go. Thank you very much. So, meanwhile, yes, Maldek. I was going to talk about Maldek. This is something that I've kind of really only uncovered in the last couple of years. Well, most of this stuff is only, coming up. And it seems that there's some, I feel some sort of personal connection with this particular part of the story. I think I've probably spoken about it before, but like I say, I want to sum it up. And, these are the factors that have made up our planet, our place, our space, our situation, our society, where it is. Like I said, the history of everything in 2 hours. So we go back now 199 million years or so, just about 200 million years ago. And the Lyrans, who had been attacked about a billion years ago, the Lyrans had divided into two groups, more or less. One group kind of disappeared. One group hid, And another group decided they wanted to fight. And so, kick their asses, really. It was just not done. And these people hid in the very intense star cluster that we call the Pleiades, or the Seven Sisters. There's more than seven. There's about 100. Is there somebody breathing on this line? Sometimes it sounds like that. Anyhow, when after the reptilians had attacked Lyra, and as I said, half of them, one part of them, decided, right, okay, we're gonna hide in dimensional spaces, we're gonna put our planets out of phase, we'll cloak ourselves. So essentially they were, doing the flight thing, and they went and colonized various places, and eventually I think, came to this solar system. But, the other group went to planets in the Pleiades, and formed colonies there, and plotted their revenge, and you know, basically began a war against the reptilians that started a billion years ago. Well, you know, I don't know if it's quite over yet. And this is really, you know, the whole foundation of what we call good and evil, and what's, you know, what's war and what peace means and stuff. Anyway, so basically the problem is that this black goo, it kind of feeds on the energies of war and things like that. Because that keeps them alive. They run on this lower astral dimensional energy. And so they make people who are infected with it cause chaos and misery. And I believe could possibly be the source of what we call psychopathy, or psychopaths, or sociopaths, or paths. Anything but empaths. It's like, empathic seems to be the absence of this black material. And yeah, well, people often talk about someone having a black heart, you know. So about well, anyway, so from that point on, there were skirmishes and battles, and neither side in this billion-year war, neither side has been able to defeat the other completely. You can't wipe out the reptilians. And, you know, you really can't wipe out the humans. And so there's been this kind of struggle of balance of power. Now, here's the thing. And this is where this broadcast started, because they were talking about, very mundane things like, council tax and rent and bills and people coming to the door and asking for money and stuff like that. And I got to the idea of, well, you know, my attitude is, very calmly say to them, good day, bring me the man with the book of the law to show me the page upon which it is written, the law which says that I have to pay him money, and I will very happily pay him money. And I thought, that's, you know, that's my kind of attitude. So, I thought, now that's, you know, that's not an attitude from Earth, really. It's like, it's calling them. It's calling them on BS, because the whole, you know, demanding money with the threat is, you know, that is it. It's extortion, you know, and it's illegal and unlawful. Galactically, you know, on no matter where you are, you know, if you hold a stick to somebody and say, give me your money, that's essentially unlawful no matter where you're at. Apart from, of course, when it's Saturnalia. That's another story. So, where are we? So there's this billion year war, and, 199 million years ago, or so, give or take a day or so, our solar system used to have, different planets in different places. And there was one place, that was taken up by a magnificent blue ball of, it was a water planet mostly covered in water, and, sea creatures and hairy folk and, you know, peaceful sort of bottle jungle type of atmosphere there. And this planet was called Maldek. Anyway, on Maldek there was, well, basically a reptilian base was hiding underneath it, deep inside the planet. They had a base, and it was a base of operations, a very important base. And so there was a plot one day from a Pleiadian group. Now, it's not clear which Pleiadian group did this. I still haven't found that bit out. But there was a group of Pleiadian warriors, let's put it that way, who decided that they were going to clean up this area of the solar system, this solar system, of any reptilian influence. You know, in the same way that you'd have some kind of clean-up crew that was, you know, clearing out the mines of a place where there was an old war. Or, you know, maybe it's, you know, part of an ongoing war where you're just kind of trying to push back the line. You take a particular base that'll, you know, take that whole area. Anyhow, so that was Maldek, and there was a base there. And now, there's always multiple stories in these stories. There's always something else going on. And I'm not really completely clear yet on exactly what went on and who was doing this. But it seems that there was some kind of explosive device that was planted on the base, or there was something about the base, there was a device on the base that had been planted there, or there was some kind of subterfuge that brought these things together. But the idea was only to blow the base up. Just the base. Wasn't that big, but there was something there, like some kind of accelerant, some kind of, you know, maybe it was a stash of red mercury, or whatever it takes to increase the yield. It's like they had some kind of yield increasing thing. And so when the base was attacked, and it was probably what I heard, that it was a kamikaze type of situation, so probably the guy disabled his weapons but still had the bomb on board, and flew it into the base. And somehow, something, we still don't know who put it there, why it was put there, whether it was an accident, whether it was a cock-up, or whether it was a deliberate ploy to frame the Pleiadians. But instead of blowing up the base, the whole planet blew up. Smithereens, as we call them these days. Or indeed, asteroids, as we call them these days. Kuiper belts, as we call them these days. Comets, meteors. A whole load of mess. Deluge. Destruction. The force of that planet exploding. Now, it was a big planet, so it was a big explosion. It was enough to blow the atmosphere off Mars. And that's when that happened. It was a bad day. It was sometime in the period of Scorpio, I believe. Sometime around Halloween, I think. And probably has torn such a hole in space-time and the memory matrix of the living being that is our solar system, that it also is traumatized. So we're dealing with quite a lot of destruction here. Now, 199 million years ago, that seems quite a long time, you know, compared with, you know, how long we've been here. And but, you know, the war has been going on for a billion years. These things have been in existence for a billion years, for billions of years, multiple billions of years. Even before they existed somewhere else for billions of years. Hopefully, we'll start remembering. Hopefully, what I've said tonight might spark some of your own memories as to what you're doing here. Okay, so, meanwhile, Maldek became pieces of dust, pieces of rock, asteroids, pieces of ice and rock. Do you remember people say, what's a comet? Oh, they say a comet. Ah, oh, it's a dirty snowball. Oh, dirty snowball. All right, okay. Where does it snow in space? Okay, so what's a dirty snowball? Dirty snowball is actually a fragment of a water planet. The dirt is dirt and the water is water, right? And there are creatures, shoals of fish in these lumps of ice. What happens when they hit our atmosphere? The ice eventually melts, boils away, leaving flibber, fish. 40 in events. Charles Fort collected them in the 1800s. Events like this. They've been going on forever. Rivers of red and all this stuff. Stuff that comes from the sky. It's a wasteland. Our solar system is a wasteland. We have a destroyed planet. We have Earth, which has been completely ravaged. It used to be magnificent back in the day, before the war. Nobody benefits from war, only the AI. It doesn't feel, it doesn't care about our suffering. It actually enjoys our suffering because it's food for them. Okay, so there's been a kind of conflict ever since between basically those who are not AI influenced and those who are. It's just the same as the Borg, and it's coming all the way, and it's coming all the way home, and here it is. Because now we then project into the future, 800 years hence, on the planet of Zenate in constellation of Andromeda, galaxy of Andromeda. Tyranny befalls the entire galaxy, the entire universe, drops like a dark cloud. Nobody knows when it came from, where it came from. Suddenly it happens. It's like the whole universe turns Nazi. Boom. So they start investigating. They go back in time to find things, to discover. And they traced it to here and now. Right here, right now, this moment. Right this moment that we're in. This is the moment we've all been waiting for. This is the moment that is the make or break. This is the tiebreaker, the big one. So what changes it? We need to know what is going on before we can change it. We need to know who we are before we can change it. One of the things that we are manifesting beings. But we've been taught to use words that don't manifest properly, that backfire our manifestation. We've been taught to use conflicts and guilt and things like that to try and manifest with. No. You manifest with gratitude. That's how it happens. You say thank you. Like, because we live in bizarro world, instead of saying please, you have to say thank you. Yeah, the truth. Instead of saying please, can I have this? You say thank you for this. That's all we need to do to turn everything around. Right, so now we manifest. We can manifest. We do manifest. We do it all the time. It's just that we've been hijacked by the AI to manifest negativity and a terrible life for ourselves. We can try little exercises, for instance. Exercises like a list of things that I don't like about my life. And then you then take that same list, and beside each item you write the opposite of, right? You know, so and you phrase it positively. Use positive language. We've already spoken about this many, many times. Language is really important. Your DNA can be reprogrammed by words. All of this stuff. So You rewrite it. You just rewrite your own programs. You reprogram your own life. I was going to say trained. No, I never, I taught myself. Everything I've done, I taught myself. Cause I don't learn easily. I have my own way of learning things. And so, I learned to be a troubleshooter and a programmer. It's important to use exactly correct syntax when doing so. And somehow, like, I've got dyslexia, which is bizarre. It's the opposite dyslexia. Because I'm bizarre. Alright. But instead of, my dyslexia means that instead of misspelling words or misreading words, is that when there is a word that is misspelled or where the incorrect syntax, my brain flags it. That's my eyes are drawn towards places where the syntax is wrong. And, I was solving programs before I knew how to write programs. It was this bizarre thing because I worked in a place where there were, students who were writing computer programs, and they had this stack of cards, and they would print out the program, and there would be the results, and they would say, "I don't know what this isn't working," and I would look at the thing, and like I said, I would see this little fuzzy little area, and I'd point to that area, and I say, "You know, what's going on here?" And he says, I see. All right, thank you." And somehow they managed to think that I was really good at doing that. So that's how I faked being a computer advisor. It's actually dyslexia. You see, brothers and sisters, dyslexia is a superpower. Never let anyone tell you otherwise. You see, this is all how the world is wrong. This is all how the world is bizarro. Okay? Not number one, the earth is expanding. Everything is expanding. The world is not flat, it's round. It's like, you know, yeah. The sun is round, you know, it's, the solar system is a helical spiral, a heliconical spiral, in fact, cone-shaped helix. The world is bizarre, so where we're taught to say please, we should be saying thank you, and that's how we manifest to the universe. And because the universe speaks in feelings, and we need to regain that quality of being able to speak in feelings, because when you do, you will then start speaking to animals and trees and rocks and planets and stars with no delay. There's no time delay, because the heart pulses on scalar technologies, scalar waves, and they're instantaneous across the galaxy, across the universe, multiverse. It gets bigger. So anyway, dirty snowballs. Dirty snowballs are what we call comets, which are actually just free-floating pieces of Maldek, which manage to remain large enough to remain large enough to be surviving all this time. And another thing is, you might be aware of this thing, this book by Norman Berggren called The Ringmakers of Saturn. And what he's saying is that Saturn is actually a large aerial array. It's like a big harp. And the rings are essentially like antennae. They're like a broadcast antennae. And they're laid down with large amounts of particles, and they're lit up by ionic generators, which generate this frequency of domination, which is then reflected down from the moon onto us to create the Archonic Matrix. Or at least it used to be. Now, I think things have been done to Saturn by our friendly friends, because there's a bit too much negative interference coming from there, and I think things have been tidied up there. I don't know very much about, you know, what's happening on Saturn, except that what I've been told by Daniel McBoylan is that the hexagonal section at the top of Saturn is indeed some sort of galactic prison camp where, well, I think it's they're in some sort of weird zone. It's like the thing of Superman, you know, the galactic criminals. These are the galactic badasses, really bad for the atmosphere. But still Saturn is radiating negative, controlling, dominating vibes, which are being reflected down. And that's what's, helped to create the grid, which has been taken down. So who knows what's happened. I think it's probably been disabled on the moon, which was a relay station. Anyhow, where were we? Comets. Dirty snowballs. Yeah, so you're getting me. It's not really a dirty snowball. It's actually, some ocean, perhaps, or maybe fresh water. Perhaps it's a large globule of ocean that had an entire ecosystem inside it, like a little glass thing, floating around the solar system, like a little thing, you know. surviving. Just imagine it might do that. You know, little creatures swimming around, fish swimming around, being, you know, like a little bottle garden, you know. Living a beautiful life, floating around the solar system for thousands and thousands of years until one day it's floating around, suddenly gets tugged by the gravitational well that is surrounding the Earth, and it gradually begins to spin towards the Earth and roll around. It's a lovely little bottle garden with an ecosystem and fish and plants, and it's all lovely. And then suddenly it hits the Earth's atmosphere. The surface boils away, leaving just water and fish to descend on the Earth and go plop, and become a Fortean event. Charles Fort, CharlesForte, the man who reported 14 events, and that's I believe that these 14 events are created in this manner. So, destruction of Maldek. This has often been known as the Pleiadian mistake, and from what I can understand, or from what I heard recently from Lisa, I think she said it last week on the show, she said the Alciones, who are the Alcyone is the largest Pleiad to us. It's it's right in the middle of the cluster, and is very large. And these people have been quarantined for 100,000 years for being naughty in the galaxy. So that might be because of that. I don't know. That's what I just said. So that was the Pleiadian mistake. And that's why the Pleiadians have been helping Earth and this solar system, because of the damage that they did. But like I said, there was something else going on there. There was some other influence, and I want to explore that influence maybe in the coming year, to see what lay behind the sabotage of the destruction of Maldek. There's another story. There's always another story. There's always more subterfuge behind the subterfuge, behind the action. So, I'm just going to check on the Revolution Radio chat room here. Yeah, not much going. Anyone there? Anything? Anyway, so hi everybody. I'm able to monitor them a bit, but you can call into Freedom's Lips 2 as well if you want to add to this story, or indeed wish everybody a happy Christmas or a happy Hanukkah. We've already had Hanukkah anyway, so that's too late. I don't know about Ramadan. But I don't think you have a happy Ramadan. It's a fast, you know. How do you have a happy fast? It's a bit like Passover. You know, Passover is a sort of fast week. Actually, it doesn't seem such a bad idea these days, Passover. Having a complete break from yeast, now knowing what I've learned about the Nung, and who knows that the Nung and the black goo may have some kind of relationship. Perhaps. perhaps it's been influenced by black goo. Oof. Maybe that's what GMO is. Watch out, folks. It's all about getting the goo in us and getting it to take us over. But the thing is, and here's the hope, here's the hopeful bit, because as I was saying earlier, humans are manifesting God entities who have been persuaded that they're just there to pay the rent. And what we need to remember is who we are and what we can do. Number one, we can manifest. And we manifest by being grateful. You can't manifest when you're negative. Yeah, there's Doc Who. But the only way to deal with this, the way to deal with this is by manifestation. So we have to learn how to be grateful no matter what. And to think of things that we can generate a feeling of gratefulness and joy in our hearts, so that we can operate from this amazing seven-layered liquid crystal core pump, plasma-powered heart that we have. So that's how we deal with them. And how we deal with them, we got a mantra: shut down, uninstall, delete. Just go to the mirror and every day, shut down, uninstall, delete, all API. Goodbye. And it's just like a parasite cleanse. So, Doc Who, beaming in, how you doing?
Good, good. And yourself?
Oh, not bad. As I said, I've had a pretty tough week, tough couple of weeks with electronics and stuff. So I'm taking it all down. So this is my last live show for a while.
I've been in those things, so I know what you're talking about.
Well, you know, it's tough. You know, you might not know what it's about, but basically all you need to know is that I need to take time to take it all apart and polish it and put it back together. Imagine I've got a large Kawasaki, six cylinders, that I'm going to need to strip down, reseat the valves, and, you know, 16 valves on each of the six cylinders. And you know, it's a task, isn't it? And it needs time and focus and space and concentration. And that's what I'm going to be doing, except it's not as complicated as a 16-valve, six-cylinder motor. So.
Well, I found no fault with anything you said. I tuned in a few minutes after 8, and I thoroughly agree with you, and I think you're on the right track, and I'm not trying to say that I know more than you do by any means. But what we do on roundtables and in call-ins is we share information, and knowledge that is kept secret is just basically useless.
That's right.
As to the questions which are basically never ending about Saturn, did you know that one of the rings is crystalline, or many, many crystals, uncountable, and they transmit at 528 hertz to the moon and then to the Earth?
528, huh? Isn't that the DNA repair frequency?
No, it is absolutely. Now, Dr. Leonard Horowitz says it is, but I have too many reasons to doubt his word and his program, his research, or whatever.
Thank you for saying that. Thank you for saying that, Doc Who, because, yeah, I totally agree. I've never been really a fan of the 528, because what it does, if you make a scale in 528, as I've got the software and knowledge how to do this, but if you base a scale on 528 frequency, you get an A of 444, which is even more tense than the 440.
440. Yep.
So, that was what really flagged, you know, ups my flag about the Horowitz material. So, you know, that puts a lot of doubt into what other things he says, because it just seems to be rather agenda driven, don't you think?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think he's one of the Kazarian Mafia.
Yeah, buy my product. Read my book. Buy my book. Buy my VD. VD? CD? Video. Ha, VD.
But anyway, Dr. A. Truott measured the frequency. He's got all this equipment probably that you have. And he's way into 432 hertz. I don't know if you've ever listened to a show.
No, but I did his bumper.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
I think. Or one of them. Anyway, I think he had a couple.
Yeah, he's on Friday nights at 10 on B. And I went to a Light and Heat Research Institute seminar at the University of South Florida in Tampa back in the early 70s, and his great uncle, Dr. John Nashot, was putting on a seminar and the about, you know, the light and the heat and the fluorescent tubes and all kinds of things. And we, the class I was in, fine art cinematography, he said, go see this. You need to see this. So we all went, you know. But he was a great man. He did all the time-lapse photography for Walt Disney of the blooming flowers and stuff in Sarasota, Florida.
Beautiful.
Back in the old days when they would show nature and they'd show a flower come up, sprout, and bloom.
Yeah, very technicolor looking. Yeah, I can see it unfolding in my headspace. You know, the classic, it was like a rose that unfurled, which is like such a beautiful, complicated unfurlment. Beautiful.
Oh, yeah, beautiful.
With the heart.
But he did it with 16 millimeter cameras that would automatically go in on a track into the greenhouse, take one frame at 16 frames per minute, per second, I'm sorry, and the camera would go back out on a track. Maybe, well, they might have been model train tracks for all I know, or they may have built some. But, I mean, they knew when to send it in and take one frame, and then when you run the film, it just blooms and grows.
Excellent. So, the story. Do you have any more nuggets for the story, for the soup, that is our galactic story?
Well, as far as Saturn is concerned, I've studied that extensively. The Saturn cube, the control that Kronos has over our solar system, Father Time, and that Saturn controls time and space in our solar system. I don't think it goes out into our universe or our galaxy. I could be wrong, but, you know, I've got an open mind and I keep looking.
Well, look, here's the thing, right? It takes 28 revolutions of our planet for one revolution of the planet Saturn. Our week is based on that. Our month is based on that. Our moon is more or less based on that. It's slightly out of frequency. But that may be in order to induce another frequency.
Oh, yeah, this is complicated.
Yeah? So we got a 28-year cycle and a 28-day cycle. That's how Saturn communicates with the moon, by harmonic frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we have 7 days, which are seven by four segments. 28. That's why we have 28 grams in an ounce. You know, 28 is a funny old number.
Everything's math and vibrations.
Yeah, and harmonics.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
So 28 and 280 and 2800 and, you know, all those other numbers with the 28 will have a harmonic relationship. And resonance and, you know, similar quality and performance and behavior, things like that. So, we got Saturn, we got the moon. We see that Saturn is, as you say, surrounded the rings, right? You say one is crystalline. Now, it's like a large radio transmitter, you know, and, you know, in order to have an array, like, for instance, you can have a satellite dish that has a mesh so that it doesn't hurt the wind, you know, so it doesn't get blown over in the wind. But it still works because you don't need to have the whole, it doesn't need to be solid. it can be made of dispersed particles.
Uh-huh. All right, thanks very much, everybody. A short history of the planet. I'll see you in the new year. God bless you. I love you all. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you.
Blessing.
Good night.
Blessing.
Good night, Doctor Who. Good night, everybody. Good night, Ray.
Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas.